Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake and pour, dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old lady for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In today's world, which is a world so terribly off-kilter, it leaves one astounded and bewildered. A world in which screaming pink-haired peeps are begging to keep crime on our streets. A world ruled for so long by evil forces and their nattering nabobs of veracity, who have all been in power for so long they cannot believe the audacity of the populace calling them on their mendacity. A world in which we ask the ultimate question, is this a prison planet? And if so, how do we break out of it? Welcome back, martini heads. I raise my glass to you. If you're joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. We are not woke. We know the agenda behind the death poke. We are American patriots with a mission to restore the Republic as close as possible to the founder's vision, and we feel we can do this best by making a conscious effort to become the best versions of ourselves, to refine the personality by letting the spirit inhabit the human. In short, we are God without religion and politics without partisanship. And some would say, in fact, I can hear you saying it now, some would say, oh my God, Ani, that is so incredibly naive. But then I say, we are creations of a cosmic consciousness that is too great for us to understand, but we know it's there. And if it's there and we are here, then we are part of it and it is part of us, which means there's no real duality. And that makes us eternal, unlimited, and bursting with stardust potential. So why can't we have a government that more closely resembles the founding fathers' dreams and ambitions? You know, the fact that we know that we're eternal and unlimited, that's enough to be going along with for now, I think. Our understanding will grow as our awareness expands, and our awareness expands by accepting our true nature, which is cosmic, or divine if you prefer, but it's certainly eternal, it's certainly unlimited, and it's certainly ever expanding. We have to ask ourselves from time to time when our lives aren't going the way we think it should be going. We should ask ourselves, do I think of myself as a divine creation? Out there, all of you, do you think of yourselves as a divine creation? Have a think for a minute while I sip my drink here. I could live with that. That's not a bad drink. Do you think of yourself as a god in a bod? Or do you think of yourself as a speck of dust lost in space, desperately searching for your planet of origin? Now, one thing we've all learnt, we martini heads, is we all come from different walks of life, all religions, all ethnicities, all professions, and all levels of education. But what we share is a love of common sense and common courtesy, common decency, the capacity for critical thought, a moral compass, a genuine desire to know oneself. And we also share a passion for mixology, because I'm sure we all agree there is nothing wrong with the odd little drinky poo once in a while. In fact, in today's world, well, it can be a bit of a lifesaver, really. But if you have given up drinking for whatever reason, there is no judgment here. You know, the establishment makes really good botanical drinks now that are excellent substitutes for alcohol. And that means you never have to avoid another social event ever again. And you can join in the party once again, and you can do so without a hangover. There is a trend towards less alcohol, and that's a wonderful thing, in my opinion. We can appreciate alcohol more when we're not, using it to drown all our sorrows and waking up the next day with a banging headache. In fact, let me take the first formal sip of today's cocktail, now that I've gone on about it, and let me see if it's actually a winner or a sinner. Hold on, my darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening, and on an official basis. One more sip, I think. Now, I found this in my late father-in-law's. One of the collections of the old Boston bartenders that he left me. And I try to go out of my way to find sort of dated, more obscure vintage cocktails that nobody drinks anymore. So more about that towards the end of the show, but it's a decent one. I think we could safely serve that to our friends. Okay, what do we have on today's show? Let's see. Well, we will always have quack, questions, answers, and comments. That is the star of our show, where you, the people, get to share your thoughts with martini heads across the known universe. Then I'm sure we will have a tiny pat of poetry, and that's the portion where I get to terrorize you, no less, with my latest crimes in rhyme. And then we have weird and wacky American movie monsters and legends. And actually, I don't know why the word movie is in there, just wacky, weird and wacky American monsters and legends. And we will end, as we always do, with my favorite part of the show, the cocktail du jour. So, my darlings, let's get on with the show. And let's begin, as we always do, with quack, questions, answers, and comments. If you would like to share the contents of your magnificent minds with martini heads across the universe, known and unknown, send your emails to me, because nobody else will read them. Ani at aniavedisian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, US of A. And don't forget to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall be forced to refer to you as omit personal details. Okay, darlings, let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out today. Shaky, shaky. You're gonna give it a little shaky, shaky. Ooh, 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 ooh. And our first email query is from Jason, who lives in Tulare, California, who asks, "Dear Ani, could you explain why defeating the deep state is taking so long? Why don't we shoot first and ask questions later? That's what we like to do here in Tulare." Funny, I've driven through Tulare on many occasions on my way south to Fresno to visit my mother. It never struck me as a particularly redneck town or a place where you're all open carrying, but I am glad to know that we still have places in America that shoot first and ask questions later. Jason, a great many people feel as you do. But honestly, it's too big a file to delete all at once. It might crash the server, you see. This is not, I mean, I'm sure you've figured out by now, this is not your common or garden variety revolution. This is a fight to rescue mankind from Luciferian ideology, for once and for all. And I have to say, a revolution this big cannot be fought with physical force as the main contender. I mean, it can't be fought with physical force at the front, at the forefront, because when you've run out of force, what else is there to fall back on? There's nothing else to fall back on. You know, we live in a world in which every aspect of our daily lives has been polluted or hijacked, taken over by the deep state machinery. If we knock it down, and if we do so all at once, and let's remember that a significant percentage of people still legitimize the deep state machinery, if we knock it all down at once, it will result in uncontainable chaos. And that is why we have to take the long and winding path to true liberty. Can I explain it any better? A revolution this big, this important, has to be an intellectual movement. A new social philosophy has to percolate among the people. And when we approach anything from the intellectual angle, we cast a much wider net, don't we? We catch much more of the deep state corruption, and we see the scope of their insanity. Now, what the good guys are doing is making sure history understands that they understand that this is a war of principles. Winning the hearts and minds of we the people is the correct way to go about it. Letting the corruption get to such an extreme that, we're letting it get to such an extreme, I suppose, because the only ones who cannot see it are number one, the people committing the corruption, and number two, the people who benefit from the people committing the corruption. The more I see the so-called plan in action, the more I am so-called impressed. Our side, the good guys, you know, we have to understand we have this plan and it's great, but so does the other people, you know, so does the other side. Our side is not the only side on the field. You know, we have a plan, but there is an enemy, and his plan is to derail our plan. So I just should, you know, mention to all the people out there who are complaining about how long this is taking, first, stop complaining and do something useful to further the cause. We are in the mess we are in because people complained but didn't get off their asses to do anything about it. Second, know that we have come too far to turn back. It's all or nothing at this point, and if we make too many wrong moves, we could find ourselves right back where we started. So, you know, you've taken the red pill, now take the chill pill, because no matter how long it takes, nothing can stop what's coming. But I do hope you take my point about the fact that this is a pivotal moment in not just mankind's history, but the entire planet Earth. The entire history of this planet is about to go upwards, take a level up in an amazing leap from upper third to lower fourth. It has to be done properly. We can't leave any gray areas. This time, history must be recorded properly, which means that we have to do it the proper way. Tedious though it might be. Anyway, thanks, Jason Intolari, for that question. It was a good one. What else came in today? What else came in today? Let me take another sip of my drinky poo here. Okay. This is an email that came from Holly in Augusta, Georgia. And she says, "Dear Annie, thanks to your podcast, I have decided to take an interest in American history and civics. Yay! Could you recommend a good book to start me off with?" Gosh, you know, there's quite a few out there that are really good. Where shall we begin? Pick one, Arnie, pick one. I'm going to pick something that's really factual, that's really well written, and it's written sort of as a page turner. I'm going to recommend 1776 by David McCullough. It's very well written. It's a pleasure to read. And it begins in October 1775 when King George of England goes before his parliament to declare that the Americas are in rebellion. And then it takes you through the thick of the revolution. And it really is a ripping yarn because I, for one, could not put it down. So there you are, Holly in Augusta, Georgia. And anybody else who wants to start reading about American history and wants to do so gently. 1776 by David McCullough, a very big year indeed for our nation. All righty. And what else came in today? Oh, we had an actual letter. An actual letter came in today from a devoted fan in Oregon. So it's an omit personal details, but I'm going to read the letter to you without any identifying markers as requested. So here we go. The anonymous person goes on to say that throughout her entire life, since the age of three or four, she has had interesting paranormal experiences. Numerous unexplained cuts, bruises, puncture wounds, scrapings on the body, things that were attributed to sleepwalking, and has also had experiences with time lapses, portals opening and closing. So clearly, this person is an empath and is very sensitive to other energies. And like most of us, doesn't really share these things because, you have to be selective who you share these stories with. But we're sharing one interaction that she can recall here. And it was a few years ago, 2016, when the devoted fan was camping with her significant other in a West Coast state park. And they'd been there for about 3 days, and they planned to be there for about a week. And they write, on the third night at approximately 4 a.m., I woke to find my partner sitting straight up in bed. And I should mention her partner is a very large gentleman, with a kind of a background that not somebody who frightens easily. In fact, I would say this is the kind of gentleman that nothing frightens him. But there we are, woken up at 4 a.m. He was non-responsive when we try to speak to him. She says, outside the wind is blowing so violently it sounds and feels as if we have a helicopter hovering over the van. The van is rocking and shaking. There were no lights, only stark darkness, desert sand blowing in all directions. The van canopy was sort of blown off. There's furniture and gear all over the place. And the dog is cowering under the bed and refuses to come when called. Generally, dogs are out there looking after their humans. So, anyway, she says, I get out of bed telling him I'm walking down to the camp trail to the latrines in the dark. I put my shoes on, grabbed a flashlight, started walking. There was no electricity in our part of the park, no lights by the restroom, no moon shining, pitch black. Sweeping the flashlight back and forth, trying to locate buildings. As I walk nearer, I sweep the beam towards the restroom, which is about 20 yards behind the women's restroom. And standing there is a mantid in full regalia. And I know it's a mantid, she writes, from the shape of its head, its big almond eyes, and insect-like arms. I stop dead in my tracks and say in my head, oh shit. Yes, so would I. And telepathically, I hear him say, she sees me. At which time he turns opaque and fades out. I'm in shock, but still continue to go to the latrine because, darling, you know, as a middle-aged woman, I know if you gotta go, you gotta go. Anyway, I make it back to our campsite, find my partner in the dark, throwing all our gear in the van, insisting we leave now, and we drove back to our hometown, stopping only for gas. On the drive home, I tried to share what I had witnessed, but my partner was not willing to discuss it and said never to bring it up again. And the question is, why do you think Arnie the Manted let me see him? He could have cloaked himself, and I would not have been the wiser. You know what? I don't think that he was accustomed to people seeing him. You've had all of these experiences, oh, anonymous person, for quite a while. You've had a lot of ET and paranormal activity in your life. I don't think he thought for a moment that anyone could see him. He probably just wasn't, thinking that he was going to run into an empath out there. So I'm not sure that he wanted you to see him. I think that just might have been an accident. That is a really interesting story, and I'm very grateful to you for sharing it with us. When we see our partners, who are big and beefy men, scared shitless, and when the dog cowers under the bed, we know that something is up. Isn't it interesting? Thank you for that, by the way, a great devoted fan. Interesting story. Is it not interesting that a great many of these encounters happen in state parks? I think we're going to have to start to do some camping someday soon and see what's going on there. All righty, what else came in on the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity today? This is again an actual postcard from ETA, ETTA, in Salinas, California. Can you send direct energy weapons to take out the entire California state legislature? Etta, if I could, I would, but I have no access to direct energy weapons, so I cannot oblige. So terribly sorry, but I understand how frustrated you all are down in California. I think it's time for a people's revolution, don't you? Perhaps we should march into the state capitol and drag people out and tell them exactly how we feel about them. Let's pick something else today. What else happened? What else happened? Did we have any more? Yes, we did. Here's one from Donatella, who lives in Turin, Italy. Hello, Donatella in Torino. Donatella writes, I was recently made aware of an ancient prophecy. Were you? I see. It is said that when the darkest days of Europe are over, Mother Earth will cause a massive explosion to clear away the confusion created by the devil. Millions will die in the explosion, and mankind will once again come to its senses. Do you have any information on this? And also, if this is true, how do you prepare for such a big event? Well, that's a very good question. Let me sip my drink and see if I can come up with an answer. Okay. I suppose we might as well start talking about it now. It's not going to go away. For years now, I've been aware of various predictions from Native Americans and also Native elders in Europe that there's going to be a massive explosion in Europe, and it's going to take out millions of people. I don't think we're going to get away with that. So let me talk about that first, and then I'll talk about the tsunamis that are coming for the West Coast of America. Donatella, what you are talking about, that prophecy, I've heard various different versions of it. We're talking about the Phlegrean Fields, Campi Phlegrei. It's a volcanic region located in the Gulf of Pozzuoli in west of Naples in Italy. So it's a super volcano. It's been asleep for a very long time. In fact, the whole thing is a caldera. This particular volcano has been asleep for a very, very long time. But I think the last time it blew its top was 1538. But, and it's a big but, scientists do believe that Little volcanoes are, I mean, little tremors are swarming, and they believe that it's building up to a massive earthquake, and we know with consequences that could be catastrophic. Because what's happening there in Campi Flegrei is the crust is becoming weaker and therefore more prone to rupturing. And that means an eruption is more likely. So if we consider that more than 1.5 million people live above the area that is basically a vast underground volcano complex, and 500,000 people have their homes inside the 7 mile long caldera, which has been around for 39,000 years. If we bear that in mind, if that blows, the effects will be catastrophic. And one assumes that everyone living in the immediate vicinity will be suffocated and killed, and tens of thousands or more will die from various side effects, depending on which way the wind blows. I mean, the death toll will easily be over 2 million, I would imagine. I did some remote viewing of that area with some colleagues not too long ago. We remote viewed into the future, and while we can't pin it down, I mean, I think we're confidently saying within 5, 6 years. And what we saw on the aftermath was miles of scorched earth. I mean, thick, dark grey, dense ash, 6 inches or more everywhere. Hardly any trees left. I mean, a few here or there, all black and charred, you know, as though they had been power washed by some giant blowtorch. We can't deny that this has been predicted by many natives of many indigenous species all over the world, indigenous races. We can't deny that it keeps coming up in our remote views time after time. And perhaps that is what it will take to shake people back into common sense. Now, will this happen at the same time as the giant tsunamis hitting the West Coast? And again, I cannot speak to the timing of it, but I do know a giant tsunami is going to wipe out the entire Baja coastline and significantly impact California and Oregon coastlines and go up as far as Alaska. I have seen this many times in my visions. And long before I moved to Oregon, when I was still living in California, I had never seen a picture of Portland, Oregon, or any of it. It wasn't even on my radar. And I had a vision of the 405 bridge collapsing, and the whole of Portland, Oregon completely going underwater. And I do believe that that is what's going to happen. I think in the tsunamis, you know, there are rivers, all waterways are affected. I believe Portland's going to crash and probably Los Angeles as well. And I think that we are not going to be able to get away with some of the natural purification and purging that Mother Earth has to do. And this has nothing to do with Harpa DARPA or, you know, all the stuff that the Navy, the US Navy, is experimenting with. This will be natural geopathic events. We have put Mother Earth through a lot, and she has a right to shake, you know, to shake things off as she ascends. You know, and Donatella asked how we prepare for such an event. My advice is as follows. If you live in or near Naples in Italy, make sure you own the correct type of breathing apparatus for volcanic dust, because that stuff will get into your lungs and it will turn into cement. And there's also a sort of glassiness element to that stuff. Not only will it block your lungs, it will cut them to shreds. So beyond that, make sure you have a plan to get out of the area. Make sure you have a 3-day bug out travel bag with at least 3 days of everything you will need on your travels into a safer area. And beyond that, listen to your intuition. If you feel unsettled and you start dreaming about volcanoes or being in long lines of food, then it's time to take a vacation away from the caldera. Earth is a living being, she has a soul. She has hosted us graciously over the years. But she's had enough, I think, of our shenanigans. And I think it's time for humans to get their shit together and show some respect. Okay? I don't like to be the bearer of bad news, but since this planet is a biological unit and she's a sentient being with her own angelic soul in there, she's going to do stuff. And from time to time, especially at the end of one civilization and the beginning of a new one, there's going to be some purging going on. So I'm sorry if you built your homes on a caldera, or I'm sorry if you live in a city that doesn't have natural water, but we haven't really managed our resources properly on this planet. And perhaps after we have these cataclysms, well, perhaps we'll be better motivated to work better with those resources. And this is an email from Muriel of no fixed address. Muriel of the mutable address. Dearest Ani, what exactly is the purpose of meditation? You know, that's a very good question. The purpose of meditation is to know your own mind. You slow down in the silence and you observe your own thoughts. Because if you don't understand your own thoughts, you will have an unfulfilling and frustrating life, because knowledge of self is imperative. Our minds fill up with junk. If we slow down, we can examine the contents of our minds and remove the junk. We find our own voice, or should I say, voices. Unless we make daily breath meditation mandatory, we will never know the difference between the voice of the true self, the higher self, and the ever-nagging voice of the false ego programming. To everyone out there saying, "I can't sit still during meditation. I'm a little wiggly worm." Well, honestly, it's time to grow up. Really? I mean, thinking that the laws of the universe do not apply to you, do you think the universe is going to give you an alternative method? You know, slowing down your thoughts is itself a form of meditation. Sitting down in contemplation is in itself a form of meditation. Do not be afraid of your own mind. That is simply too dysfunctional to contemplate. Because if you can't be honest with you, you don't stand a chance in life. Prayer or prayerful contemplation is a conversation, isn't it, that you're having with your higher self or with your God? It's a mind thing. Prayer is the mind thing. The reason we do the meditation is that what your mind is projecting is accepted by every cell of your body. The meditation connects the chakras, the aura, the little copper wires, the little meridians inside of you. It connects everything, and it puts your energy anatomy on the same wavelength and along the same purpose as your mind. So prayerful contemplation is mental, but the meditation takes it to the rest of your being. So you need both. There, I hope that was a good explanation. All right, let's take a few more questions before we move on into poetry and monsters and cocktails. Let me take a little sip here. All right. This is from Havel, Havel, in London, UK. Dear Arnie, how do we know the difference between need and greed? Ooh, a bunch of philosophers have been writing in this week. Let's see. How should we answer that question? We generally always know if we have what we need. We feel contented, we feel relieved, knowing all the tools are at our disposal. So why would we want more than we need? What is the thought process behind wanting more than you need? If we desire beyond our needs, then we can rightly assign that train of thought to greed. And we'll know when we've slipped into greed by questioning our motives to possess that which is beyond our need. So the desire to hoard, it shows our insecurity, and it shows our attachments to the notions of lack and limitation. So when we start slowing down and when we start taking a path of minimalism, it's not about lack. It's not about that at all. It's not about doing with less per se. It's about direction and focus and removing anything that is a distraction. Because that's greed and not need. So, hope that worked for you. And what else did we have today? This is from Candace in St. Louis, Missouri. Ani, what happens during a property clearing if a ghost does not want to move on? Can you make it go against its will to the other side? Oh, good question. Ghosts are people too. And if the ghost doesn't want to go, the ghost is not going to go. But that said, when I clear property, portals open to the other side on location. And the vibration of the portal is irresistible to the lost soul. So it's extremely rare for them to want to stay. You know, once we convince the soul that it will be received lovingly and fairly in heaven, it's not a problem. You know, we all want to go home. And being a ghost in the land of the living is actually not a pleasant experience. So, I mean, thank you for that question. That's a really nice one. We make it, Candice, in St. Louis so that, you know, the portal's open and you want to go home. But if you refuse to go home, you can't stay in the area that is being blessed because you will be sucked into the portal. So, you know, we often find ourselves having little conversations with ghosts, teaching them metaphysics 101. You know, you're dead. It's going to be okay. God loves you. Here's a portal. Anyway, interesting stuff. I'm just going to take a moment now and say thank you. You know, I'm not quite finished with the questions and answers, but I just want to take a moment to thank a few people. I want to thank Barbara from Zanesville, Ohio, for the beautiful handmade cards she sends me on every major holiday and the very sweet little card you made for my birthday a couple of weeks ago. I am truly touched that you would take the time to create these wonderful pieces of art and share them, and also share your sweet words of support. I do not take these gifts for granted. Thank you, Barbara. I have kept every single card you have ever sent. And I do like the idea you gave me of taking a deeper dive into some of the old fairy tales, because some of those are really quite sort of creepy and paranormal. And I think I'll play with that in the shows to come. So thank you, Barbara from Zanesville. God bless you. And I also want to take a moment to thank the lovely people who sent me donations for my birthday and to the lovely and very private people who send regular monthly donations to Cosmic Ani. I do not take these things for granted. May each and every dollar return to you tenfold and more. And while we're sharing the love, a shout out to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for graciously arranging the intergalactic distribution of this show. Mystical Wares is your one-stop metaphysical supply store in Mount Vernon, Washington. And if you can't make it there in person, go to mysticalwares.com. Because online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Huzzah for Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington. Huzzah. Okay, darlings, let's take our last question for the show before moving on to other things. This is from Josh in Flagstaff, Arizona, who says, Dear Ani, I saw you on the Jeff Mara show. I'm trying to make the transition from worshipping God to representing God. It's not as easy as one might think. Do I just stick with it until I get it? I love your direct approach there, Josh. Yes, in short, yes. The time spent in breath meditation will help you to observe your own thoughts. You'll see where the blockage is, where the resistance is, and through the breath and the silence and the prayerful contemplation, your mind will be restored and will receive only information from spirit. And that's when the magic begins. You see, you have to accept that you're God in a bod. You have to accept and absolutely believe that you are an intrinsic part of the divine. There is no separation. Meditation does not make a connection per se. You are already connected. Meditation removes the distractions, so you can tap into the connection. So, hope that helps, Josh in Flagstaff, Arizona. And thank you to everybody who wrote in. We had a really nice bunch of questions. You're all upping your game out there, and that's good because it means I'll have to up my game as well. And now it is time for a tiny pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I like nothing better than coming home, putting my feet up, and having a nice cup of tea or a small drinky poo, and writing really strange, non-peer-reviewed poetry. And let's face it, my darlings, my poetry is without peer. This week, I have chosen three short feel-good poems. All of my poems, by the way, are available on my Substack channel, which can be accessed from my website, aniabedissian.com, or directly from Substack's website, and it's free. You don't have to pay a penny. You certainly can. There's a tip jar in there, but you certainly don't have to. So I'm going to present my trifecta of a crime rhyme right here today. One is about credit cards, and the other two are just about fitting in, really. Okay, here we go. This is called Purchasing on Credit. Is it a convenience or an emotional debit? I will only use them for emergencies. Oh, that it were so. My willpower is equal to that of Hercules. But we know that is not how it goes. We confuse having credit with having true wealth, and that's the beginning of poor mental health. You've had a hard week. You deserve a nice prize. Those cool shoes at the mall, they might have your size. May I suggest a handbag that matches? That's how the ego mind baits us and catches. We learn it late, but hey, that's fate, and many out there can surely relate. I'm not a believer in counting your beans, but I think it's much better to live within one's means. You know, we're all guilty of using credit cards for something other than emergencies. And once you get into the habit, it's not a good habit to get into. I think being debt-free, that's the way to go. And I'm certainly doing my best to pay off all my credit cards and be in the green once again and remain that way. All right, this next one is called We Find Our Path by Walking It. And isn't that true? I mean, is anyone ever ready for anything? We just have to do it and learn while we do it. A few steps in, we'll know if it's a good fit. I'm all for planning. Planning is wise. Get those thought forms fanning. Analyze, plot, scheme, devise, and engage in mental scanning. Preparedness is common sense. Every story needs a plot line. But we can't sit forever on the fence, waiting for the illusionary perfect time. It's just a point of origin, a place from which to start. The fruits of our mental foraging lined up in our checkout cart. Press the button, place the order, and start the new adventure. One day we all must live safe harbor, or forever remain backbenchers. In this world, there are no guarantees. And things may not go your way. But as long as we have the birds and the bees, there is hope for another good day. That's quite nice. See, not all my poems are about deep state and adrenochrome and, ghosts and stuff. I write some stuff about normal stuff too. And here's one I wrote because, gosh, we've had so many fractured relationships over the past few years, haven't we? Families have broken up, people saying, you can't see your grandchildren unless you get the COVID shot. And it's just, oh, we are not sweeping these past few years under the rug, my dear. We are going to learn a lot from this. This is called They Say All Wounds Are Healed by Time. That seems to be the socially accepted paradigm. Here we go. When things upset us and rattle our cages, we huff and we puff, growing angry in stages. It's never the thing or event that enraged us. The aura short circuits, the mind outrages. A few deep breaths will smooth out the static and ensure our thoughts are no longer erratic. We don't make decisions when we feel dramatic. Our approach to the problem should be pragmatic. I sit in silence. Quite often, I pray. Not all days are sunny. Some days are grey. It is true, though somewhat cliche. We really do get over it on a random day. And we get over it not because of some major aha moment that happens to us. We get over it because we spend time in silence every day, listening to our voice, which is the voice of the divine, which is the voice of my ego, which is the voice of my human running around in circles. Who lives in my head, and are they paying rent? Without the ability to observe our thoughts, literally detach and observe our thoughts, we'll never sort out the true from the woo, from the stuff that genuinely, in this day and age, has to be flushed down the loo. And now, my darlings, before we run out of time, it is time for Weird and Wacky American Monsters and Legends. And I was scouring all of my books, looking for what shall I talk about today on the monsters part. And I came across this Banshee of the Badlands by Charles M. Skinner. And I've always been fascinated by banshees. As I grew up in the UK, and we were always told that the banshee would scream before you died. So in the playground, we were always going around running after each other and screaming and going, "I'm the banshee, and now you're dead." It was funny decades ago. Not so funny now, is it? Here we go, Banshee of the Badlands by Charles M. Skinner. What shall we make of the banshee? Hell with the fires out is what the Badlands of Dakota have been called. The fearless Western nomenclature fits the place. It is an ancient sea bottom with its clay strata worn by frost and flooding into forms like pagodas, pyramids, and terraced cities. Labyrinth canyon winds among these fantastic, brilliant peaks, but bleak, savage, and oppressive. Game courses over the castellated hills, rattlesnakes bask at the crater's edge above burning coal seams, and wild men have made a despairing stand against the advancing civilization. My gosh, these badlands sound terrible. I can barely pronounce some of the words in there. It may have been the white victim of a red man's jealousy that haunts the region of the butte called the Watchdog, or it may have been an Indian woman who was killed there. But there is a banshee in the desert whose cries have chilled the blood that would not have cooled at the sight of a bear or panther. Ooh. By moonlight, when the scenery is most suggestive and unearthly, and the noises of wolves and owls inspire uneasy feelings, the ghost is seen on a hill a mile south of the Watchdog, her hair blowing, her arms tossing in strange gestures. If war parties, emigrants, cowboys, hunters, any who, for good or ill, are going through this country, pass the haunted butte at night, the rocks are lighted with phosphor flashes, and the banshee sweeps upon them, as if wishing to speak, or as if waiting a question that has occurred to no one to ask. She stands beside them in an attitude of appeal. But if asked what she wants, she flings her arms aloft, and with a shriek that echoes through the blasted gulches for a mile, she disappears. An instant later, she is seen wringing her hands on her hilltop. Cattle will not graze near the haunted butte, and the cowboys will keep aloof from it, and the word has never been spoken that will solve the region's mystery or quiet the unhappy banshee. And the creature has a companion. Sometimes in an unfleshed skeleton that trudges about the ash and clay and haunts the camps in search for music. If he hears music, He will sit outside the door and nod in time to it, while a violin left within his reach is eagerly seized and will be played for half the night. The music is wondrous, now as soft as the stir of the wind in the sage, anon as harsh as the wolf's cry, or startling as a rattler's stir. At the east begins to brighten, the music grows fainter, and when it is fairly light it has ceased altogether. But he who listens to it must on no account follow the player if the skeleton moves away, for not only will it lead him into the rocky pitfalls, whence escape is hopeless, but when there, the music will intoxicate, madden, and will finally charm his soul from his body. Ooh! This is a segment that was compiled and edited by one Kathy Alexander. It's the Legends of America, updated April 2024. And that piece was by Charles M. Skinner, who died in 1907. But he authored a complete 9-volume set called Myths and Legends of Our Own Land. And he printed that in 1896. And I definitely want to get my hands on the complete 9-volume set of Myths and Legends of Our Own Land. You know, what they were thinking about American folklore being recorded in 1896. This is treasure trove, people. This is a treasure trove. So, the Banshee. You know, what is that saying of Shakespeare's? You know, there's more between heaven and earth that is dreamt of in our philosophy, Horatio. There are dimensions within dimensions, boxes within boxes. Each one of those have strange little timelines. They have their own anomalies. Parallel universes, alternate universes. We're only just beginning to scratch the surface of how our cosmos works. We think we know something. We give people PhDs, in, you know, quantum physics and cosmology, etc. But you wait another 20, 30 years. You will see as our awareness heightens and our minds are illuminated by this incredible inpouring of Christ light that's pouring in here. You wait. All the secrets that we ponder now, all of these things that we believe are secrets, things we just don't understand yet, all these things will be revealed to us. Our land mass will change. Planet Earth has changed. You know, continents split apart. It's quite possible that when the Baja Peninsula goes under, California will split in half. You know, we really don't know, but things are going to change big time. The land itself, the way we think, everything is going to change, people. That's what it means to go into a new civilization, into a new era. Everything is going to change, and all of it for the better. Well, my darlings, let me take this opportunity to remind you to visit my website, aniavidesian.com, and take a look at the classes and programs I offer for your edification and also for your entertainment. And if you are, like many, struggling with addictions, or you just want to smooth out the rough spots as we ascend into the new golden age of peace and prosperity, you can join my Ego Busters group. Yes, we do it by Zoom, and we have our own Telegram group. We are in our third year, and we're taking on new people for a new season of earnest ego busting starting January 2026. So if you're interested in that, go to my website, check it out, and then write me a note. Also, please check out my spiritual literacy program and my Tarot A-Go-Go program, both designed to teach the core tenets of metaphysics and help refine the personality. And I'm happy to announce that Cosmic Conversations and classes are all back in 2026. So go to the website, sign up for the monthly newsletter, and join in the fun with the rest of the Cosmic Ani gang. And I really do think that's it for this week. I have finished my drink, and that always means the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I always do, because I love you, Martini Head, so much. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Today's real-life cocktail was, wait for it, a bolero cocktail. Dun, da, 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 da. Da-da-da. And here's how you make it. You take 1.5 ounces of a good golden rum, a 1/4 ounce of apple brandy, and a 1/4 ounce of sweet vermouth. Put them into a shaker with cracked ice and stir well. Do not shake, but go ahead and strain. And then pour that into a 3-ounce cocktail glass. There is no dressing required on this one. You should be dressed while you drink it, but there's no dressing required for the cocktail. But I do like to put a slice of candied apple on the side of this one. I quite like that. Now remember, folks, cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. If you use top shelf ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink is all you need. I'm Arnie, mad as the day is long, Aberdeecian. This was a Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah! Until we meet again, kick communists in the nuts wherever you find them, and don't put up with woke rubbish, and do whatever you can to support the restoration of the American Republic. And we can do that best, y'all, by letting the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Alphadesian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.